This is PFW in Progress.
Come to the coast. We'll get together. Have a few laughs.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Is that him?
I am in charge of this situation.
Oh, you're in charge.
Well, I got some bad news for you. I'm not the one who just got butt-f***ed on national TV.
Brian Morey.
I wanted this to be professional, efficient, adult, cooperative. Not a lot to ask. So he won't be joining us for the rest of his life.
Paul Perillo.
Roy, you all right?
Just trying to fire up that 1,000-year-old twink.
What do they put in these things anyway?
Sugar-enriched flour, partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. Holly sorbate 60 and yellow dye number 5.
And Andy. And Andy?
Mayday, mayday. Anyone copying Channel 9? Terrorists 6 or more armed with automatic weapons at Nakatomi Plaza.
This channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Andy Hart.
No f***! Lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Some guy named Tom.
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture. This is John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
PFW in Progress.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
All right, PFW in Progress, we're back with you. I'm Tom Casale, and I'm honored to be joined by the world-famous Paul Perillo. Paul is, congratulations for being mentioned in John Mallory's Media Blitz. Mallory has called Paul the next big thing.
All right,
and
Tom,
I'm sure Paul.
Can we just move on now?
I'm sure Paul agrees with that assessment.
That is not what we're looking for.
Definitely not.
Well, we're back from Cincinnati, and I have to say, disappointing display by the Patriots. I mean, winning by less than 4 touchdowns on the road against the Bengals. Why did they even bother showing up, Paul? I mean, you know, if they're not going to blow a team out by more than 30 points on the road, they're just useless.
Well, I think two areas in particular, Tom. One, the running game needs to be much more productive.
Yeah.
Two, I think with all the playmakers that they have in the secondary, you know, how you can go a whole game and not intercept Carson Palmer.
Right.
I think is just ridiculous.
I mean, the Falcons are rushing for like 300 yards a game. The Patriots are at 236. That's embarrassing. You know, but obviously we're kidding. It was total domination on the part of the New England Patriots this Sunday. You know,
complete and as satisfying a win, in my opinion, as they've had in a regular season in all of these.
I mean, we knew the way to beat the Bengals. We all agreed. Every one of us thought was to run the football. But if you told me that the Patriots would hold the Bengals to 13 points before the game started, I'd have bet my life on it. I mean, especially with Eugene Wilson and Ellis Hobbs not even making the trip.
Yeah.
And yet, again, they find a way. Paul, how do they do it? It seems like, to me, I've only been here a little over a year now, that this team actually needs adversity. Like, they feel, when they get adversity, they like it. They play better. I just don't understand it.
I do think they feed off it a little bit, and I think that when they can actually accurately use the whole us-against-the-world mentality, I think that there's no one better at it. I mean, this week, they were right. I mean, nobody really gave them much of a chance to win this game. Certainly we didn't. We all felt that Cincinnati would win the game, even Fred.
And that's the thing, too. I mean, we're getting some emails criticizing us for jumping off the bandwagon.
Right.
Listen, Fred Kirsch picked against the Patriots. Do you know what kind of odds have to be stacked against the Patriots for Fred Kirsch to pick against them? I mean, they have to be monumental. And we just felt at this point in the season, the Bengals were the better team, and they're not even close. It's not even close.
There were some people last week that emailed us and felt like the Bengals, the Patriots would win the game.
Right.
And one of them, actually, we got a call from James in Roanoke Rapids. And he actually... He said that the Patriots were going to win the game. I think he said 24-17, and it was some thoughtful, legitimate predictions. Most of the, and we didn't get, I mean, if we got 50 predictions last week, 45 of them said the Bengals were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but the ones that we got that said that the Patriots were going to win were mostly just Patriots will win because.
They're the Patriots.
Know? And if you always pick the Patriots to win and you've never picked the Patriots to lose, then that kind of falls on deaf ears. You know, we're not going to really take
right.
it that seriously. Here's all that you need to know about this game, Tom. You go in the Patriots locker room after the game, even they were surprised. Not that they won.
But by the way
they
won.
But the way
they
played. Even they had doubts whether or not they could do it. when Rodney Harrison comes out and he's saying we made a statement and we proved to ourselves that we had to prove to ourselves that we could play with an upper echelon team. He was asked, were there doubts? And he said, not necessarily doubts, but concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that all you need to know? The team themselves had some lingering,
right,
doubt in the back of its mind of whether or not they could do this. And I just think the performance overall was one of the best, and we're talking about 5+ years now since this run began in 2001, one of the best overall performances that I can recall in the regular season. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put it up there with a playoff game, obviously.
Right.
It doesn't have nearly that magnitude, but this, a lot of people brought up that St. Louis game, back in 2004 when all the defensive backs were out and they played the Rams. This blows that away. I mean, the Rams were not a good team then. They were 4-3 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They finished 8-8. They were a mediocre team. The Bengals right now were 3-0. They were at the top of the world. They came in here. Everybody felt like they were going to, just march up and down the field. And the key to the game, Tom, in my opinion, were the first two drives that ended up in
held
field
them
goals
to 6 points
instead of touchdowns. If it goes 14-0, the game might be different.
Exactly. That was definitely the key. Even after it was, me and you both said, after it was 6-0, they get the pick. And then if they go down and make it 13-0 there, still it might change. But the Patriots held, and we all felt, when it was 6-0, into that first, we all kind of felt that this was shaping up to be the Patriots game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take anything away from the Patriots, but, I cover the opposing view, so I'd like to talk about the Bengals for a second. I mean, you couldn't find a bigger bunch of punks in your life than the guys in that locker room, to be honest with you. I mean, Rudy Johnson was the one guy, him and Justin Smith were the two guys I would say that said, we got our butts whooped, we need to look at ourselves in the mirror. TJ Hushmanzada apparently did not. He must have left when they were up 6-0 and thought that they won the game, apparently 38-13, because he said things that were so mind-boggling about how they were the better team and blah, blah, blah. And the best line probably ever was when asked, what do the Patriots currently have that you don't? He said, the Patriots don't have anything that we have other than 3 Super Bowls. It's certainly not talent.
Sometimes the best team doesn't win sometimes.
I just think that tells a lot about the Bengals. Because when I went into the locker room last year, Paul, when the Steelers lost, now that was a bitter loss for the Steelers.
Yep.
They really wanted that game. But they said, hey, we talked, and they won. So right now, they're the better team. Maybe we'll get a shot at them again down the road, but they came in here in our house and won, and they're better than us. And that's what I think is how you should act after you lost. Not that, because I got to be honest to TJ Hushmanzada. I don't know if he thought there was one play that changed that game, but I saw a thorough, not only domination on the field, but Marvin Lewis, as you pointed out during the game, Paul, was thoroughly outcoached by Bill Belichick,
yeah,
and it showed by the outcome on the field.
I felt, and just one thing before we move on, but in defense of Cincinnati, I'll say that it took Pittsburgh a lot of years and a lot of growing up to do to get to the point where they got where they said that the better team won last year in that Week 3 game in Pittsburgh that you're
right,
talking
about. Right, but I think
Pittsburgh came out of a lot of losses with the Patriots talking just the way.
Sometimes the best team doesn't win sometimes.
Right, but
that's
don't
just
you
the
think,
way it is, plain
don't you,
and simple. The best team doesn't win sometimes.
And is that Joey Porter? That was Cordell? Okay.
But don't you think, last year showing that they've kind of grown up might have been a reason that helped was why they won a championship.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But in defense of Cincinnati,
right,
it took Pittsburgh a long time to get to that point. And this is the first crack where Cincinnati, is perceived to be at the top of the hill and loses to the Patriots badly. And they didn't not only they didn't handle the game well. Look, we can go on and on about Cincinnati, about the Patriots, but Cincinnati fell right into the trap. And I'm not talking about talking, because the talking didn't have anything to do with this game. It's the way they played and the style. And the reason I said that, and I wanted to get to your point about the coaching, the reason I said that I felt like they were out-coached, and I was talking last week, I think it's very difficult to resist the urge if you're an opposing coach with a great offense and you see the other team coming in with a banged-up secondary. It's very difficult to resist the urge to just, let's say, let's go and throw it all over the place. Let's go 4 wide. Let's spread them out. Let's make them cover us. That falls right into Bill Belichick's hands.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter who's doing the defending for Bill Belichick. It can be Hank Poteet. It can be Troy Brown. It can be Ty Law and Tyrone Poole. It doesn't matter. He'll flood zones. He'll make sure he keeps everything in front. The big plays that Cincinnati was able to make the other day were a result of run after catch.
Yeah.
They didn't get the ball downfield one time all day. Not one time. Because Belichick will take that away from you. So what you need to do to resist that, in my opinion, is just offer a steady diet of Rudy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots did not stop Rudy Johnson in that game.
No, they just had to go away from the run.
They did not run the ball enough.
Right.
They didn't run it enough early. They had third and threes that they didn't run the ball. Third and twos they didn't run the ball.
And you know what, Paul? Some of those were second and twos.
Yes.
And they threw it two times in a row because I remember we commented on they should have run it.
Right into the Patriots' trap. And that's what Bill Belichick does better than anyone. He makes you think that you're playing the way you want to play, but you're actually playing the way the Patriots want you to play.
Mm-hmm.
What was the defensive alignment for the Patriots throughout the majority of that game, Tom?
3-4. They played the extra defensive backs
the whole game. And I would say something like 80-85% of the snaps, they had four down linemen,
mm-hmm.
and then they had just two linebackers.
Right.
And the rest were defensive backs. And you're running the ball, 14 times?
Yeah, I think it was
Rudy
14
Johnson,
or 14
times?
No, 17 for 71, I think it was.
Okay,
17 for 71.
That's as a team then.
Yeah.
Rudy Johnson had like 14 for 60-something.
Yeah. And maybe that's – I mean, I should paint the picture. I walked into the locker room, and I was kind of like – it's a huge locker room. And I was like kind of looking around to see where to go first, and nobody was really in yet. And I heard someone go, hey, there's Rudy. He had just come out of the shower. So I was one of the first two people there. And this man was mad, and I mean mad. And I thought he was going to take a punch at me because he was not happy. And then after the game, I told Paul, I went on some Cincinnati message board just to see what their fans were saying. And they're pretty upset with the play calling in Cincinnati because they don't feel, as Paul was saying, that they don't run the football enough. Because on one, I think it was the second drive when it was 3-0 when they were down there. It was 2nd and 2, and they didn't even bother giving Johnson the ball on 2nd down or 3rd down, just throwing. And like you said, the Patriots were playing the pass. And you said it during the week that they need to stay with the run, even though they're going to be in that defensive alignment. You know, they have to resist the urge to throw it all the time. They didn't do it. And
what Marvin Lewis should have done was continue to run Rudy Johnson and force the Patriots to play a conventional defense.
Right.
You know, if you want to play those extra defensive backs and keep everybody in front of you, fine. We're going to run Rudy Johnson down your throat.
Right.
And you're not going to stop him. And they didn't stop him when they ran him.
No,
Marvin Lewis just didn't run him enough.
I agree with you.
And it's not even so much the number, which is, to me, was concerning from the Cincinnati perspective. It was what you just talked about. It was the situations. When you have a second and two from the 22-yard line, why not run the ball?
Well,
and get some first downs and move closer and then just impose your will on the other team. Make them get those defensive backs off the field.
Or even in the second half when we said they weren't running the ball, I don't remember what the score was when Colvin almost picked that pass off. I think it might have been 24-13.
I think they scored. No, I think it was only...
Was
it
21-13?
I think it was 14-6 because I think they scored on that drive. When it didn't get picked off, they eventually scored.
So
because that was deep in the Patriots' territory.
But that was a 2nd and 1. And that's the play. I mean, you know, that's what we're saying. It's those
right.
kind of things. And the Patriots obviously knew they were coming because Colvin read that thing a mile away. They must have seen it on film because he jumped that thing and he would have been gone.
That's a great point, Tom. And that's another thing people are going to say, well, they couldn't run the ball anymore because of the score. Well, the score never got out of hand.
Until later in the game.
It was 21-13 in the fourth quarter. One touchdown, one score game.
Right.
So it wasn't until they continued to throw the ball,
and
people are going to make a big deal about the Patriots' turnovers and all that stuff. This is what I said that we're going to have. They didn't get any pressure on Palmer. They didn't get any pressure on Palmer all day until it was 24-13 in the fourth quarter. All four sacks.
No,
fourth
you're
quarter.
Right. You're right.
Both fumbles. Fourth quarter. Game was over when that all happened. So Cincinnati could have played this game any way it wanted to. They chose to play it the way the Patriots hoped they would.
Right.
And
right
once again, it's another example of Bill Belichick just undressing the other team's coach.
Yep.
This was Super Bowl 36, in my opinion, all over again. Mike Bartz, Marvin Lewis, they can't help themselves with all these weapons they have on offense. That's exactly what the Patriots are looking for, is a lack of maturity on the other side, and they use it against them.
And another point of bad coaching was the punt. And I'll tell you what, I got, just from players talking to themselves in the locker room, they didn't say anything to the media, but listening to them before they addressed the media, I had a feeling that they weren't too happy that they punted there either. And my theory was, you have to know the way the game is going. The Bengal defenders had their hands on their hips, they were tired, and you could just tell, if the Patriots get the ball back, they're going to cram it down their throat. So it's not like it was a defensive struggle and you're trying to pin the Patriots back. The only thing you're going to do by putting the Patriots at the 10-yard line, you're going to make them go 90 yards instead of 70 yards, because you're not going to stop them.
Right.
So we all thought that that punt by Marvin Lewis in that situation was a terrible idea. You had to regain momentum there.
I believe that was 21-13.
Yeah, it was 21-13, but that's what he said. It was a one-score game.
Right,
but,
and that's why.
Right, exactly. Because your defense, I mean, that Bengal defense at the end, they wanted no part of those running backs. They didn't want any part of it. If you watch the replay of Maroney's touchdown run, the 25-yarder, guys are just standing there waiting for him to come to them. That's the one difference I noticed between Denver and Cincinnati. Someone had asked a question coming up here later about it. Denver, their linebackers attack. They attack the line of scrimmage. They attack the ball carriers.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, they stand there and they wait for the running back to get to them so they can either make a move or, as they found out, get stiff-armed into the ground by Lawrence Maroney. And that's what happened. They're just not. Listen, if anyone out there has a Bengal fan or anything who thinks that they're going to win the Super Bowl, get out as much money as you can and say, what do you want to put on it? Because they got no shot. You play defense like that, you're not going to win any Super Bowls. That's been proven throughout the history of the NFL. The Rams finished sixth in the NFL in total defense, first in the NFL in rush defense the year they won the Super Bowl. You do not win Super Bowls by just throwing the ball around and not playing defense. It won't happen. And if the Bengals keep playing like this, they ain't going far in the playoffs.
To further illustrate your point, Tom, the Rams the following year had the same high-powered offense. It may even have been better. But the defense was ranked near the bottom, if not dead last, and that was the difference. They got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs by the Saints of all.
By the Saints, yeah. I believe that was their first playoff victory ever, right? As a franchise, I think.
Yeah,
it was against the Rams. Do you want to hit the emails?
Yeah, the only thing I'll say about Cincinnati moving forward is that there's still time, you know.
Oh yeah,
it's only four games,
but
we'll see. We'll see if they learn any kind of lesson from this game. Now, judging from the comments coming out of the locker room, they haven't, because they still lack the maturity. But you know what? You need to have some discipline. And Chris Henry not playing in that game, you know, hurt Cincinnati. And you know, a lot has been made of all the Patriots' injuries that they had. Cincinnati had a lot. Cincinnati had four starters not play, which is the same as the Patriots. You know, the Patriots were missing, you know, Hobbs and Wilson and O'Callaghan and, you know, we give them, rightly so, we give them a lot of credit, you know, for playing without a lot of starters. But Cincinnati did so as well. The bottom line here, they're going to need to have to find out how to get this turned around, because they're too good a team, in my opinion, to play a game against anybody the way they played against the Patriots on Sunday.
Right, but as we have said many times in the past, when you can't stop the run, you can't stop the run. When teams can just line up,
that doesn't go into a slump.
And
you're absolutely right.
You know what I mean? And that's what I, because like Sam Adams, he is a waste of a roster spot. The guy is always on the ground. He's finished. So that was the guy that they kind of thought was going to be their run plugger in the middle. So that's the reason I'm concerned. Odell Thurman isn't coming back. So
how are they going to stop the run? Big thing. And not only he's not coming back, Tom, but they thought he was coming back next week.
Right.
You know, and now he's not coming back. That's a big, he had a great rookie year for them. So that's a huge thing. And I think that you make the point about the run defense. I think that's, it's almost like, it's like defense in like basketball or, you know, in baseball, you know, infield. That doesn't go into a slump.
Right.
You know,
when you can run the ball.
And if the other team can't stop you, it's not like all of a sudden you're going to go in with a good running game and play a team that can't stop the run, and all of a sudden you're going to struggle one week. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Look at the Jets. The Jets can't stop anybody from running the ball either. Even the Colts had a good running game this week.
Exactly. I mean, as we were saying, the Jets, you could tell they're obviously their next draft pick was going to be a big one of those 300-pound nose tackles to help their run defense.
Yeah, because obviously they don't feel like Dwayne Robertson can do that.
No.
And, he doesn't want to do it either. So.
But that's what I would say about the Bengals is that, yeah, they played bad. There's time to turn it around, but if they're not going to be able to stop the run, you got the Steelers going for 170, you got the Patriots going for 236. Guess what? Those are the teams you're playing in the playoffs. You're not playing the Texans and the Titans in the playoffs.
Right.
So beating them by 40, that's great, and it gets you a nice record and everything. But in the playoffs, you're going to have to stop the run. I'm just not sure they can do that.
I agree.
All right, our first email is from James. And he said after being manhandled by the Broncos, he had to eat a lot of crow because a lot of his friends are Broncos fans, and he was happy to see that they turned it around this week against the Bengals. His question is, what is up with Richard Seymour? I paid particular attention to him in this game and noticed, one, he is very slow off the ball by a whole step compared to Wilfork and Warren. He is getting the least penetration of all the D-linemen. It appears that he cannot shed blockers. It also appeared that he was not double-teamed much at all during this game. I also noticed on several plays that he was just gave up on chasing the play down. Wilfer and Warren are playing great. Part-timer Jarvis Green playing out of this world when he gets his chances. Did Seymour even make the stat sheet? He may even have been credited with one tip pass, but that's about it. So what do you make of that, Paul?
Well, I didn't watch, the review of the tape to watch, specifically Richard Seymour, so I can't necessarily dispute a lot of these things. This is something that we've been talking about. Tom actually brought this up a little bit last week. Seymour doesn't seem to be as active as he has been in the past and doesn't seem to be making as many plays. Now, I would disagree with one thing, even without seeing anything. I don't believe that he's not being double-teamed. I just don't believe that. I'd like to go back and look at the tape a little bit and see that. But there's no disputing the fact that he has not been the Richard Seymour that we're accustomed to. I can't dispute that. And, as far as the penetration goes, I wouldn't get lost with that. You're not really supposed to. Those guys aren't asked to penetrate, really. I think that Seymour was responsible for at least one of Jarvis Green's sacks. As one play that I saw, Seymour flushed Palmer right into Green's hands. I think it was the second sack that Jarvis had.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that this has been the best four games of Richard Seymour's career by
right.
any stretch, but I'm also not going to paint it to be as negative in as negative a light as that email did.
Yeah, sometimes, we talked about slumps earlier, and I'm just watching, they're showing Yankee highlights up on the TV, and like the slump Jeter was in last year, remember, where he couldn't get a hit, and he was getting booed at home. Sometimes players they get in that little bit of a rut sometimes, and they gotta tweak something here or there because maybe teams are finding something on tape on them or something, and I'm sure Seymour's going to get out of this. The reason I made the point last week was because I just felt like in a game against the Broncos is the type of game where he needs to step up when they're going to run the ball, they're going to roll out, and it would have been nice to see him make more plays, but I'm certainly not saying that I'm ready to, cut Richard Seymour and start Jarvis Green or Mike Wright. That's, far from the truth. All right, the next is Dan. He was just talking about how great the game was. Gabriel's TD really helped lift the spirits. 25-yard pass, run, and touchdown. He says, if you take away the Pats' running game, you take away their offense, as they have no vertical one, though it seems to be getting better. Dylan is a big bruising back, but Maroney can't take the beating. Dylan plays smash mouth up the center. The Patriots are not as bad as they showed in Denver, nor are they as good as they showed on Sunday. I'm going to have to disagree with that because me and Andy, before you came in, Paul, were talking about Maroney and the way he runs mean. He runs with a nasty streak, and I said to Andy, I'm going to try to get a hold of the Minnesota University of Minnesota coaching running backs coach this week because I was watching Marion Barber play. And he's not nearly as explosive as Maroney, but he runs with that same physical, where he takes his shoulder and he looks to level somebody. And
you know what strikes me as those, just to back up your point, both of those guys seem like they have like really, I don't know how to put it, but like really tough thighs.
Yeah,
they look like they deliver a lot of punishment with their legs.
They do.
And,
they do.
And both guys seem like they run angry with and guys, a lot of guys bounce off the thighs in particular.
Right.
Just, that's kind of a, I don't know if that's a style or they're just kind of similar in the way
right.
they
report. That's what I was wondering. I thought that I would just wanted to speak to the coach and ask him what his thoughts were on that. But I don't know if Maroney can't take the pounding. Listen, I've been saying this all along. Next year, we're going to be talking about that guy. He's one of the five best backs in football. He's splitting carries this year, and that's a good thing.
I was going to say, you don't have to worry about him taking the punishment
right.
because you're going to have this, as long as they're both healthy.
Hey, best back in the NFL, LaDainian Tomlinson, okay? Rookie season, last five games, he kind of tailed off. It's you know, as a fantasy football writer, I know it all too well. It's called the rookie wall. Virtually every rookie running back who has to carry the load hits it. Cadillac Williams last year for Tampa Bay hit it. So with Dylan here, we don't have to worry about Maroney hitting that rookie wall. Then he'll have another season of being in the, you know, the off-season program, lifting weights, getting bigger. But by next year, this guy is going to be totally unstoppable. And anybody who doesn't see that doesn't have eyes. Because as we were saying last week, Paul, they were giving Maroney crap about the Denver game. You could have had Corey Dillon. You could have had Jim Brown. You could have had Walter Payton lined up in a wishbone. And they weren't getting any yards against the Broncos defense. Okay, moving on. We have Nick from sunny San Diego. He says he won his office pool this week because he was one of the only people to pick the Pats. He also had Cleveland and Houston. Good job, Nick. First off, let me say the Denver game wasn't that far out of reach. If we had Jackson and Gabriel for the whole preseason, I have no doubt we would have won. If Gostkowski makes that kick and Sanders, who is worse than Starks in coverage and Deion Sanders at tackling, makes the hit, the game is in overtime. Speaking of Gostkowski, I was once again forced to watch the game in a bar because the Cleveland versus Oakland game was clearly a better game. But what happened with the missed kick in the first half? Was it blocked again or did he just miss it? Oh, it wasn't blocked. Paul, you can, I know you have comments on that.
Well, I just the email in general. This is why, you know, people get, that they get mad at us, okay? Our listeners sometimes get angry with us because they accuse us of jumping off the bandwagon, okay? This is what happens is the reason why we don't take a lot of the prediction seriously is because we can get someone who can email in and legitimately, honestly, try to objectively say if 17 things didn't happen, the Patriots could have been in overtime
right.
in that Broncos game. The Patriots were so thoroughly outplayed yeah. against Denver, it wasn't even worth it. It was the most lopsided 10-point game that you'll ever see.
They got whooped. There's no as good as they looked against the Bengals, they looked equally as
quote
bad against
Bill Belichick,
Denver.
Anything you want to ask me about needs to improve. Everything. That's from the head coach. That's not from me or you. That's from the head coach, okay? Suddenly, if James Sanders had tackled Javon Walker, they don't score there. I guess that you just eliminate the 20-yard completion for a first down, and they're just not going to score.
Right.
I mean, that's why sometimes we don't take it seriously when the Patriots are going in as a 27-point underdog, and everybody says, oh, the Patriots will win. That's why.
Right.
Because there's no objectivity whatsoever. Anyway, the Gostkowski kick, this is a concern, Tom.
He missed, I mean.
You know, we're in a downward trend here.
We're getting
he
all
missed that field goal about as bad as you can miss it.
And everyone's talking about his kickoffs, which have been great.
Excellent.
But you know what? If you kick off well and are 2 of 7 from field goals, out of field goal attempts, Bill's going to replace you.
Right.
And Josh Miller said that last week. If you don't do your job, Bill will replace you with somebody who can. End of story.
Right. And look, I think it's great that he's doing a good job kicking off. You know, his kickoffs, I think, were an underrated part of the game on Sunday. He's consistently had them deep in the end zone, and that helped the coverage immensely. I'm not trying to understate that. But a field goals kicker's job is to make field goals.
Right.
Not to bang them, you know, 8 yards deep in the end zone on kickoffs. If he can do that, that's great. Any coach in the league would sacrifice the distance on the kickoff for an accurate kicker.
I agree.
Single one, bar none, 100%, would sacrifice that. They'd rather have him made those kicks and had his kickoffs landing at the 5 yard line than the other way around. Look, I'm not giving up on the kid. I think he's got some raw ability, and as I said before the season started, I'm not comparing him to Adam Vinatieri right now. I'm comparing him to Adam Vinatieri when Adam was a rookie in 96, and Adam similarly had a slow start to his career. He missed, I want to say, something like 3 out of his first 4 or 4 out of his first 5, something like that. And then he got things together in a game against Jacksonville here in Foxborough. He made 5 out of 6, and including an overtime 40-something yarder. And then all of a sudden everybody was able to breathe easy, and he became Adam Vinatieri that we know. So it doesn't just happen automatically. He's got to get his feet wet. He's got to get his confidence. It'll come. I'm not giving up on him, but I also don't want to just kind of brush it under the rug that he missed a field goal like Mike Vanderjagt missed that field goal in the playoffs last year. That's how far wide right it was. It was, I mean, almost off the screen.
Right. And Nick wants to know about Tyrone Calico, the former wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans. Nick, he was a guy who was a big play guy. They really liked him, but he suffered two just terrible, terrible knee injuries. It was the kind of injuries that when he's coming back from, he has setbacks, and I'm not sure if he'll ever play in the NFL again. So I don't know if he's a guy that anyone's really looking at, because I don't think he's the same after his injuries. But he also wants to know, where's Willie Andrews? He looked pretty good to me in the preseason. I saw one shot of him on the bench with him looking awfully glum and bored. Why not use him as a return man who is young and has a shot to go all the way?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that a little bit, and I'm not exactly sure why Andrews hasn't gotten any opportunities in the return game. My only guess is that toward the second half of the preseason, Tom, we remember he was a little loose with the football. You know, a couple bobbles on catches, fumbled one here and there. So I think that might have scared Belichick a little bit, and maybe he's just going to let the kid get into it a little bit more before he goes back there. And look, obviously, you probably lack the big play power right now with Kevin Falk and Troy Brown, but in terms of ball security, they're probably among the best. And, you know, Falk had a big return last week, 43-yarder. Yeah. That, you know, granted, I think most people probably would have taken all the way. But, you know, I think you maybe sacrifice a little big playability for ball security. Now, I know that Kevin, you know, he can put the ball on the ground a little bit here and there. But generally securing the football on the catch is he's among the best.
Yeah, and he almost put one on the ground against Cincinnati, but he was down on the play.
Yeah, he was definitely down on that, yeah.
We got an email from my paisano, P.J. Naccarelli, and he's actually apologizing to me. That's an interesting turn of events.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Hey, guys, I just had to write in to apologize to my paisano friend, Tom Casale. Because I don't live in the New England area, I didn't get to see the Pats preseason games. I saw the games against the Jets, Broncos, and now the Bengals. Anyway, after the first quarter of the Bengals game, I said to myself, Tom keeps talking about Maroney turning 5-yard gains into 30-yard gains. When the heck are we going to see it? Well, Tom, as soon as I doubted you, Lawrence Maroney went off. Sorry again, and keep up the good work, fellas. I love the show.
Look at that douchebag.
Hey, Fred, you are great on the show, but in your game recap on Patriots.com, you have a mistake saying that the Bengals got a field goal from Brad St. Louis, the long snapper tight end. Come on, Fred, you got to do your homework better than that.
Good job, Fred. Obviously, it was Shane Graham.
Yeah. Well, you know, so, Paul, you know what I know. I know talent. I know it when I see it. This guy, and I believe, despite what you heard from those idiots on Monday Night Football last night, that Walter Payton is the greatest football player I ever saw. And I won't compare Maroney to Payton, but the way he stiff-armed Madu Williams, then did that little Payton-esque shuffle into the end zone like Walter used to do, it kind of almost looked like Sweetness himself. This guy's got power, speed. I think he's got that mean attitude, probably learned it from Dylan, running with that chip on his shoulder. And I'm just, every time I see the guy, I get more and more impressed. We all do, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, we all liked him in way back in the mini camps, the way he moved around, the way he even caught the ball, we were all impressed with, because he hadn't done a lot of that in college. And now, seeing him in the preseason games, he said something after the game that I think was kind of cliche, but it's really accurate. He's looking to go the whole way every run.
Yeah, he tells the huddle, let's get a one and out. I'm bored being in the huddle.
I mean, he runs like that. He runs like he's looking to take it to the house every single run.
He does.
And I don't
mean that in a bad way,
because sometimes some running backs can always be looking for the big play, and they dance around a little bit too much, and they maybe have too many negative runs. Mm-hmm. you know, the, like the Barry Sanders thing. I don't necessarily look at him that way. I just think that he's looking to plow through that line and get to some open area, and then he's not looking to duck out of bounds. He's looking to deliver the punishment.
Right. No, I totally agree, and I love that running style. And he's, the guy's got a way about him. We saw him in the hotel lobby joking around and jumping around laughing, and he kind of brings, like, I thought last year at too many times the team didn't have enough of that. I thought that they were too, you know, I remember saying, I don't know if it was to you or Andy, you know, it's a game. You know, you right. should treat it like it. So I think he brings that to the team. He's got that kind of fun-loving attitude. I mean, you just, you know, just talking to him or spending any time with him, you just, it's one of those guys you like instantly. And I think that really helps the offense and the team in general.
Yeah, you can be professional and prepared and still have fun and not look like you're going to the doctor's office for an enema. You know?
Right.
And that's the way the team's professional, quote-unquote professional mentality sometimes was too businesslike, I thought.
Yes, I totally agree. And it's someone like
and
that.
Now, they don't always play like that. I think they show a lot of emotion on the field.
Right.
In fact, sometimes I think that I don't know what people are watching because they always say how they never, you know, showboat or anything like that. I think they do a lot of that on the field. So the emotion comes out there. But just, you know, sometimes in the day-to-day routine, I think that they've been much looser. You know, certainly
yeah,
last week. Last
I
week,
agree.
And we talked about that during the course of the week, but we thought they were pretty loose going into the Denver game and they didn't play well. Then we thought they were just as loose this week, and obviously they played the best game that they've had in at least a year.
Right. And right now, I mean, hands down, he's rookie of the year. But I just want to make one point to defend my man, Reggie Bush. They were making something on ESPN saying he can't get outside in the NFL, and I was watching the
I've
tapes.
I've seen him do it several times,
well, listen,
and I haven't even watched that many games.
Are you kidding me? They had the offensive linemen are standing there watching him. They had seven defenders chasing him, the Carolina Panthers. You can put Barry Sanders back there. He's not going to get outside. I don't want to hear that crap, that Reggie Bush can't get outside in the NFL. That's just garbage. Barry Sanders did it, and as soon as someone decides to block...
Lawrence Maroney did
yeah,
it the other day.
Right.
I saw him.
And as soon as somebody decides to block for Reggie Bush instead of standing back there watching him, which his offensive linemen are doing because I could see it on the play, then he too will have big runs. But right now, if Lawrence Maroney didn't win Rookie of the Year, there should be an investigation into that award by far. We have Russell, and he says, gentlemen, and Lori, if she's lurking about. She is not. Well, now that Maroney had the breakout 100-plus yard game.
Let's turn it over. Patriots Football Weekly's Andy Hart.
Tom must have the car running, waiting to drive Dylan out of town. Well, that's not true. I had that car started up about June. I do want to say that come next year, when they have to travel to Chairman Mao Stadium, is that how you say it, Paul?
I thought it was Worker Stadium or something.
It's probably Burger King, so who knows. Anyone who matters should be on the PUP list and left behind, including Tom Casale. I added that one in.
Oh, okay.
Just bring the scrubs, hoping for a roster spot. Only getting to see the highlights because they were forced the Raiders game on us here. How come, too many people saw that Raiders-Browns game to be healthy.
Luckily for them, it was a good game.
Yeah, that's true.
They may not have been two good teams, but they actually played a good
game. Yeah, that's as good a game as you're going to see from those two teams. Do you see this as well? Are the defenses taking Watson away as an... It seems that Gabriel is on his way to becoming Brady's number one wideout. Do you see this as well? Are the defenses taking Watson away as an option? Although when he gets open, it seems always to be for a large chunk of yardage, which I'm sure makes up for the 6 catches for 36 when he gets 1 for 36. And finally, if the Bills end up releasing Buffalo safety Troy Vincent, do you think the Patriots will go after him for insurance since the secondary is getting banged up again? Thanks, guys. Enjoy the work.
I can't really read.
Only the first one I screwed up. I've been doing pretty good today.
I'm not so sure. I don't know about Troy Vincent. The Watson thing, you know, first of all, I don't necessarily think 1 for 36 makes up for 6 for 36 because the 6 for 36, five of those could have resulted in first
downs. Right.
You know, so depending on how that all unfolds, you know, I think things can change. I don't think that teams have really been focusing all of their attention. Now, does Watson get more attention than maybe a lot of tight ends? Yeah. Because the Patriots' wide receiver core is not that deep, we can all probably agree upon. But Watson's had more opportunities to catch the ball, and he hasn't caught it very well. I mean, let's call it what it is here. He's had some drops. He's been open, and Brady has found him, and he hasn't made the catch. So let's not just put this all on the fact that the wide receiver depth isn't quite where you might want it to be. There's a little bit of, you know, like Bill always says, it's a combination of factors when things don't go well. And for Watson, he's been open a couple times, and Tom has missed him, and he's been open a couple of times and had the ball go off his hand, off his face mask. What's the matter over there?
Nothing. I think we got John in Palm Bay on the phone.
Hey, I just want to know if you guys had any idea of how much Dante Scarnecchi was getting paid by the Pats, and like, is there any honors that he's received in last year? Because me and my brother watching the game Saturday, I was amazed that Patriots would lose the offensive line, but they would just plug someone else just right in, and he'd be just as good as the guy that lost.
Yeah, no, Skarnak, I have no idea what he makes for a salary.
But if you're interested, my salary keeps going down $7 every paycheck, if you're interested in my salary. Remind me to speak to Fred about that. But as far as Dante goes, I have no idea. Do we know how much any of the assistants make?
No, I don't even know what Bill makes, to be honest with you.
You want to make $5 the hard way?
But you are right, John. He is a very, very important part of the Patriots coaching staff, and the way that offensive line is developed under his watch is remarkable, and you're absolutely right the way you put it. He has been able to plug guys in. It goes back throughout this run. It doesn't matter if it's Russ Hochstein playing or Stephen Neal or, you know, Logan Mankins as a rookie last year. Now all of a sudden you got Ryan O'Callaghan as a rookie, plays the first 3 weeks, can't play week four. Wesley Britt, first-year player, making his first career start. He's out there and you don't even notice a difference. Matter of fact, it may even have gotten better. So you're absolutely right to point out and credit Scarnecchia.
And I just wanted to know Correspondent does retire at the end of the year, which he hasn't done yet. Do you think he might sign a one-day contract and retire as a Patriot?
It's interesting. I would doubt it since he played the majority of his career with the Jets. But who knows? They seem to be doing a lot of that stuff now, these one-day contracts. Yeah, who knows? What do you think, Tom?
It all depends if the Patriots feel like he fits their worth system and they can fit him into the cap and all that stuff. So we'll have to see.
You do have to look at his career, though. He played 3 years with the Patriots and, what, about 8 or 9 with the Jets, right?
So yeah, I would say no.
I would say he probably considers himself a Jet.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Good stuff, John. Yeah, you know, those one-day contracts, they're becoming the... Yeah. I'm going to sign a one-day contract with Sports Illustrated when my days are over.
With the Herald.
No, with Sports Illustrated. Screw the Herald. What are they doing for me?
Right, we got Jeff, who was telling us it's time to eat some crow. Hey, PFW, it's Jeff from Moncton, the loser you said Christina should ditch last week. How do you like that? How do you... I don't remember him, actually. But
You weren't on. It was Andy and I.
Okay. How do you like them apples when the team that nobody thought would win sprayed the Bengals with a can of whoop-ass on Sunday night? So let the backpedaling begin. There's plenty of space left for those of you to come crawling back to the bandwagon you all jumped off of last week. Well, Jeff, I don't know
not
if...
backpedaling whatsoever. I didn't think they were going to win the game. I'm not
right.
Backpedaling.
And I don't know if Christina's hot, but if she is, tell her to bring her pretty little self over to my apartment tonight, and I'll show her a real man.
She's hot.
Lover Lang.
I still think you're a loser. I think the upside of Bush is phenomenal.
Jeff, just, you know, for interest of full disclosure, you did not email us in last week and tell us that you thought the Patriots were going to win, by the way. So
yeah, I wasn't on the show.
We can play it safe and just wait to see what happens and then decide from there what we, you know, and operate in that way. But that's not what happened. Anyway, Tom, Jeff's fiance was it Christine? Did you say Christina?
I think it's Christina.
Okay, she had Jeff evidently made a promise that if the Patriots go to the Super Bowl, that he would take her to Disney World and do all these sorts of things, and he completely reneged. I'm forgetting some of the details, but he reneged on the deal and said that he wasn't going to do it. So Andy and I said it's time to ditch him. It's just the tip of the iceberg. He's selfish. We got to get rid of him.
Yeah, I agree, especially after that
email. After that email, yeah. I'm even more confident.
We have Alex chiming in. He says, hello, A-Team. Apparently he knew Fred wasn't on the show today.
Right, because the A-Team is any show that doesn't involve Fred.
The A-Team.
Uh-huh. He says, Jarvis Green made some big plays on Sunday, but I think the most important happened in the second quarter. Situation. Bengals lead 6-0. Brady has just been intercepted. 3rd-and-5. Cincinnati lines up in a single back, 4-receiver set, and the Patriots are in an unusual formation where Roosevelt Colvin is the third lineman while Bruschi and Harrison show blitz. My guess is that Palmer reads the defense and switches to a running play. After the snap, Bruschi and Harrison back off. Colvin and one lineman go after the passer, and Green is the gatekeeper who makes initial contact with the runner, then Bruschi and Harrison complete the play. Result, Bengals punt for the first time. New England's defense forces a 3-and-out after a turnover, and the following drive ends up with a touchdown, which gives them the lead for good. Now to my question. Do you have any insight on what the idea is behind those defensive sets?
It was a sub package. It was a passing situation. And if the Bengals had actually run in some of those situations on a makeable down and distance, they probably would have had more success. But that was a 3rd-and-long, and you're just trying to trick them by running, and you didn't quite make it. If I remember correctly, he fell about a half a yard short.
It was Kenny Watson on the draw, and he finished. He came up a half yard short. And I will agree that that was a big point in the game, a very
part of the game, because I think if the Bengals had done what they were doing at that point, even if they had kicked another field goal, you know, there would have been that sense that you know what, we're not going to stop them all day. We might be able to keep them out of the end zone here, but we're not going to stop them. But they stopped them when all the momentum was on the other side. And that allowed the offense to get its act together, and before you knew it, game was over the other way.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. I think that was a huge, huge point in the game. And, I mean, much like the Bills, the Bengals came up just short on that run, and they really needed to get that first down, because when they punted, that's when I think we said they've dominated the game, and they're up 6-0. They're in trouble,
yep.
And they were. Luis. During the Friday show, one of the guys, I think Fred or Paul, mentioned that Belichick was very playful in his comments and that his attitude is unusually a sign that he knows something that may beat the other team. Although on Friday, Fred or Paul, said that BB was just trying to relax the troops because the game was no contest. After the score, I want to ask you, do you think Bill really knew something?
I have no idea.
No, that was Fred that said that, and he also has said the same thing the week before against before the Denver game. Fred's very big on trying to read Belichick's mood and body language, and generally he's wrong.
Yes, I would agree with that. Okay, Colin. Hey, guys. It's Colin from Connecticut. How about them Patriots Sunday? With a 14-13 lead, they deliver a crushing blow to the Bengals by blowing them out after halftime. Great plays from both sides of the ball. You guys were all wrong, but I give you guys credit. I was starting to think the team the same way after Denver's win over us. Now how about a little fact or fiction, all right?
Excellent.
One, Tom Brady will have a 3,500-yard passing season with 15 TDs in the air.
Fact.
Fact. Lawrence Maroney will beat out Dylan after the bye to become the full-time starter.
That's already happened. Fact.
Yes, fact. Chad Scott will continue to start even after Hobbs comes back from forcing him into the nickel role. I'm gonna say fact.
I'm gonna say fiction.
Even though I love Hobbs, I just I don't know. Chad Scott brought some of that physical play I've been looking for from that secondary.
I like Chad Scott.
Kevin Falk will catch more balls and have more yards than Gabriel and Caldwell. Apparently, that's going to be fiction.
Fiction.
Because he hasn't caught as many as I thought he would. One more Super Bowl win will bring the retirement of Bill Belichick.
I have no idea. I'm going to say fiction.
I'll say fiction,
but
too.
I don't really have any idea.
Yeah. I just think he loves coaching and football too much. I don't think he really has any other interest, to be honest with you. Thanks, guys. And one more thing. The Pats will roll this week, 36-17. Take care.
Yeah, I gotta like the Patriots' chances this week. I'm sure we'll get into that as the.
We can talk about that for a minute. The only thing I would say. Listen, the Dolphins proved last week how bad they're playing, but for them, this is the season. You know, it's kind of like that wounded animal in the corner thing. So if they lose this game and go to 1-4. The best case scenario is they pull what they did last year to finish 9-7,
yeah,
basically.
I'd give the Dolphins a little bit more of a chance to have that happen if the game was being played in Miami.
Oh, me too.
You know, that desperate team at home kind right. of thing, but this is...
But the one thing I'll say is, you know, we didn't want to get too knee-jerk reaction after the Denver game, so we shouldn't do the same here. What if the Patriots are one of those inconsistent teams? You know, that one week they look great, the next week they kind of like, you know what I mean? So we still have
to
see that. We have to see them put back back-to-back two good games, and I obviously do not think Miami is going to win this game, but I think they will give it every ounce of effort they have because this is their season is on the line. The only problem is they're relying on Dante Culpepper with one leg, and that's just not going to happen, not with that offensive line.
Right.
No way.
I totally agree, and I do think that Miami is a better team than it's shown. They've played absolutely awful football. Matter of fact, If they didn't have the attention that they had coming into the season, whereas a lot of people thought that they would be a contender, I think that you would have them in that list of guys, Oakland, Green Bay, Tennessee. Well, they've played every bit as poorly as those teams
and
have.
To back up your point, they played two of the worst teams in football. Houston,
yes.
They lost. Tennessee, they played at home and
barely
beat by
won.
Three. I mean, this is a team that the Cowboys scored 45 points on. That's the most points they've scored on the road since 1971. That's how bad the Titans are. I mean, they're about as bad as you can get. And they barely beat them. So, yeah, I agree. If it wasn't for the high expectations and the way they finished last year, I think people would be calling them one of the worst teams in football, which they very well may be. We'll find out this Sunday. Dave says, great win. I said last week the Patriots would win. I also said that I thought they were a half step off. It seems like they made up that half step that game. It did look like they were still having some trouble in the first quarter with the bigger plays. It seems to me that Brady was getting Doug Gabriel more involved, and I'm glad to see that. With the bye week coming up, do you see the defense getting better against the big plays and being able to shut down the better offenses in the NFL?
Do I see
the defense getting better, like in the bye week and... I mean, I think they just did shut down.
I think the defense was outstanding on Sunday.
Offense in the NFL.
You know, I don't really know what you're looking for if that wasn't a dominant performance. But at the same time, it's, you know, as much as we all wanted to sit here and say that one game didn't mean the season when they were outclassed by Denver, I got to resist the temptation to do the same thing right now. Now, my heart is telling me the Patriots are back. And the Patriots are the top of the king of the hill again in the AFC. But I have to resist that. My head has to resist that because it's still one game.
Right.
They've played four games and played well, in my opinion, and won.
Right. I would say one and a half.
Yeah.
I thought they played well in the first half of the Jets game. It looked like they were kind of maybe starting to turn that corner a little bit. And then that, I'd give them one and a half.
Right. And maybe the Jets are a little bit better than we, you know.
I think the Jets are a lot better. I think they're playing very well under Eric Mangini. You know, they. Listen, most people would say that the Colts and Patriots are two of the three best teams in the AFC. The Jets took both teams down to the final play.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty impressive.
You're right.
Okay, I think we have a phone call. We have Jamie
in Houston.
Jamie, what's up?
What's going on, fellas?
Not much.
Hey, I think we're all pleasantly surprised after Sunday, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way anybody can have any sort of negative spin whatsoever based on that.
Unless you live in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and I heard you guys talking earlier and, you know, backing up. And I myself didn't think they were going to come away with the W. But, you know, I think we're all happy to see it, and I think everybody was on board with acknowledging that, you know, it wasn't as bad as everybody was making it out to be after Denver. And, you know, that's what, you know, I'm most happy about. That, you know, maybe people will get their hand off the panic button and realize we've got a good team with some depth and it's still early and it just takes time for them to gel. And somebody had complimented Skarnecki on the great job he did, but we got to look to the defensive coach as well on the good job bringing in Hank Poteet, signing him up off the street, and getting Scott in there and making those guys work as well.
Yeah, I thought the defensive backs made a good point after the game on Sunday. I think Artrell Hawkins was the one who was really stressing it. Yes, they were without some guys on defense, but the guys that they had that they were bringing in, you know, Hawkins played and Chad Scott played. And you couple those two with Rodney Harrison, you're talking about a lot of NFL experience.
Yeah.
You're talking about guys who were all around 100 career starts. that's a lot of football. That's a lot of savvy to be able to fall back on. So when you have a guy like Poteet, as you said, Jamie, it's a little easier because the guys that are out there, they know what they're doing. You're not dealing with a lot of, you know, first and second year pros trying to run around, you know. With all due respect to James Sanders, there was a difference the week before when he was called into duty. You know, Chad Scott's been around a little bit. He knows what he's doing. I don't think he's going to be confused with Deion Sanders, but he's a good, solid NFL cornerback who started a lot of games in this league for a lot of successful teams in Pittsburgh, you know. So I think that was a good point I thought that Hawkins brought up, was that the guys that they did have playing knew what they were doing.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's part of what's been taking a hit, too, I think, in the media. And you guys have kind of touched on it, where there's been some fear that nobody wants to stick around. You know, there's no guys of worth that want to sign back on. But the Patriots still do a pretty decent job of finding the talent available for the value and making the most of it.
Right. It's like anything else. It's just like you said with the Denver game. You know, things weren't as bad as they may have looked. Same kind of deal here with, you know, it's not, people say that everybody wants to leave, but obviously it's not everybody. There are plenty of guys that have re-signed, guys like Vrabel and Jarvis Green and Russ Hochstein, you know, Brady and Seymour. There's guys that have stuck around and re-upped, and the Patriots will continue to find guys that they can get into their system and be successful with them. The question is, will they keep finding enough? So
yeah,
they can be at the top. Yeah, so they can be at the top. Because, I mean, let's face it, when you win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years,
people want what you got.
Exactly. And going 10-6 and making the playoffs isn't really good enough when you do that, because that's what people are looking for. They're looking for, you know, having a chance to win the Super Bowl. In my opinion, the Patriots last year didn't have a chance to win the Super Bowl. Now, some people would disagree with me on that, but I felt every time they played a team of equal or better value,
they got beat.
Just about they got beat, with a couple of exceptions. I think they were like 2-6 in those games, 2-7.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you look at history too, with all the powerhouse teams that have, you know, how many times can the teams go 14-2 and 13-3?
No, it's just very, very difficult.
Doesn't happen very often.
That's why I used to get mad, Jamie, because we would get a lot of emails saying, you know, this is ridiculous. I think Andy Hart picked them to go 13-3 last year. Picked them to go 13-3, and we got lambasted with emails saying, how could you pick them to go a mediocre 13-3? You know, like, I don't think people have any idea how difficult it is to win that many games.
We have good fans. They're just not loud, and they're just not grounded in reality.
Right. There's only a couple of teams in the NFL history that have had better records in their franchise's history than 13-3. Do you realize that?
Yes.
Even the mighty Cowboys' best season ever was 13-3, and they've been to 8 Super Bowls. So to say that 13-3 is mediocre, I think you now have the definition of spoiled.
Yeah. And real quick before I let you guys go, you touched on the Miami game. You know, that's I think that you look up trap game in a dictionary, and that could be it, because, you know, I think we all know everybody in the division plays this tough. You've got the Saban factor, and I expect them to win, just as I didn't expect them to be too successful against Cincinnati. I expect them to be very successful against Miami, but, you know, it's going to be a hard-fought game. They always play as tough, and so if there's going to be a trap game out there, this could be it.
It's a good point.
All right, guys. It's always a pleasure. Keep up the good work, fellas.
Okay, take care,
Jamie.
All right, we'll hit one more email, then we'll take a break. We got a Bradley Hughes coming in. My computer died last week, so I didn't catch your picks on Thursday. Just curious if any of you picked the Patriots to win. Fred? No, Bradley, even Fred.
Even
with the
Fred,
Bengals, if
we
you
all,
can believe it.
We were all guilty. We all went down.
Although I can guarantee...
None of us is backpedaling now, believe me.
But
we all thought they were going to lose.
Yes, and I can guarantee you one thing. Tom nor Fred is ever going to pick against the Patriots again. That I can promise you. I know I won't, and I'm pretty sure Fred won't. So I can make that guarantee. It reminded me of Brady's first start against Indy in 01. It looked like a blowout beforehand, too, for the bad guys. Well, I should tell you, Bradley, an interesting story on that is that I was in a room with people who lost, and I was not a part of this one, that lost over $3,000 on that game. And before my cousin unloaded his bank account on it, I said, games like this just scare me because they look so easy, and we don't know anything about this guy. And his response was, I know something about him. He sucks. What do you think about that? And he called the bookie. His famous last words.
I tell you, Tom's gambling stories are just so high on the entertainment value meter.
He was not looking good an hour after that call, let me tell you. He says, Tom, no hard feelings, big guy. You explained yourself much better after my angry rebuttal, if you remember what I'm talking about. I do not, but I'm surprised I explained myself much better. I can tell you that much. I'm surprised.
Especially if he was angry.
Yeah, I'm surprised I didn't respond with an angry rebuttal. A fan couldn't have felt much worse after the Denver game. Then you can't feel much better after the Cincinnati game. Wow, what a turnaround. Maroney and Gabriel look like real studs. Then he has a P.S. I think Mangini is trying to be a little too aggressive going for it on the fourth and goal from the three in a tie game. I can understand his thinking, but it sure came back to bite him. Well, I got to disagree with you, Brad. It's just what we were talking about with Marvin Lewis. He knew he had to score points against the Colts. Looking back on it now, yeah, the 3 points, he needed it, but he was going for the touchdown. I think he sent a positive message to the team, and while it didn't work, I think that'll bode well for the Jets in the future. Did you agree with that call, Paul, or no?
It's funny. This is going to sound terrible because this is one of those anybody can do it after the fact. I agreed with every trick play that he used except for every gamble that he used. I agreed with. They went for fourth and one, I think. Fourth and three that's a long way. Fourth and goal from the three. I'm not sure I agree with that one. And I totally understand your line of thinking.
Right, I just think he thought with his defense the Colts were going to score a touchdown anyway.
But that's fine. You score as many points as you can, and in that situation I think as many as you could get was three. And I think sometimes you gotta take what you can get.
I wouldn't beat him up over it. You know, haven't checked the
Absolutely
New York media,
not.
But if they're trying to find a way to beat up on Mangini, and if that's the way they're trying, then they're wrong.
Absolutely not. They knew going into that game you're playing the Indianapolis Colts and it's gonna take 30 to win, and that's fine. That mentality is fine. They went for a fourth and one, they went for an onside kick. I love those gambles. The onside kick is the same mentality.
Right.
You know, I can go 7-7 here, but if I want to try to do something, it doesn't matter if they have to go 80 or 50 yards. They're probably going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to need to do something to try to shake things up. I loved the onside kick call. Even if it didn't work, I would say the same thing. I know it sounds foolish because I'm picking on the one thing that didn't work. All the other things that he did worked. But I just think the 3 yards, if it was fourth and goal from the one, then I would have gone.
Yeah.
Because now fourth and goal from the three, they know you have to throw
it. You have to throw it. They were in pass defense, too, and that's what hurt them. But one thing I should say is they were showing the final play, and so this is show you the guys on ESPN how much they know. They said, boy, could you imagine if they scored? We've never seen a play like that in the NFL. Really? Well, because I saw Jacksonville and the Saints a couple years ago when the Saints did it and scored, and John Carney missed the extra point. I mean, they forgot about that play that quickly?
Coming up with the legendary radio call from the Saints guy.
Yeah.
No!
Okay, one more quick one before the break.
Well, I need to eat my potato chips.
All right, just one question, one quick one. Anthony Foster, just for the sake of speculation, What odds will you give Lawrence Maroney on finishing the year with more total yards than Reggie Bush?
Total yards?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a 6-5 pick 'em. I think that's going to be close. Right now they're virtually identical, right?
Yeah, it'll
within like 30 or 40 yards.
I think Bush is going to end up getting more rushes as the year goes on, and he'll probably end up edging him out in total yards, but rushing yards Maroney will have more.
Maroney's going to have probably close to double his rushing yards, but
right.
the passing, you know, it all depends on how close the passing is.
Okay, so we will take a break and we will be back in a few minutes.
The New England Patriots won an amazing 3 Super Bowl championships in 4 years. We live these defining moments in Patriots history with a limited edition print featuring action photos and images of the 3 championship banners that now hang at Gillette Stadium. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by perennial Pro Bowler Richard Seymour?
It's going to be shot. Richard Seymour.
This autographed print exclusively from the New England Patriots is perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points.
extra points card and free 3 championship banner print signed by Richard Seymour. Patriots extra points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 300 and qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details. It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords. 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves. Come on, baby.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip. And suddenly, my hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in progress.
The census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
Oh, wait. Was he a great big fat person?
Paul Perillo.
Why don't you ask me about Buffalo Bill?
You should come here. You can do this damn radio show.
Buffalo Bill, what a naughty boy he is. Do you know why he's called Buffalo Bill? Please tell me.
Very excited to be a Dallas Cowboy.
And Andy. And Andy?
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told. It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Andy Hart.
Now it places the lotion in the basket. It places the lotion in the basket. What the f*** lotion in the basket?
Some guy named Tom.
Oh, he's a monster. Pure psychopath. So rare to capture one alive. From a research point of view, our most prized asset.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
Was she a large girl?
Yes.
Big through the hips? Romy, what else?
PFW in progress.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner.
Okay, we're back here at PFW in Progress. I should probably give the email address and phone number since I haven't done that yet. Tom Casale and Paul Perillo here with you for the second hour. Email address is webradio@patriots.com. Phone number is 508-543-7482. A couple of things we're going to be talking about here, Paul. I see some emails coming in. The Haynesworth situation, we'll be talking about that. And saw a couple people have emailed in about Marquise Colston from the Saints about Rookie of the Year. Well, yeah, he is definitely in the running, as is Greg Jennings from the Packers. You know, let me put it this way. If Bush rattles off a couple of 200 or 150-yard rushing games and has a couple of big plays, it's over because he'll win it anyway, so you can forget about it. But I'm just saying right now, I don't think any players had an effect on the team like Lawrence Maroney has. This team couldn't run the ball 2 yards last year, and he's totally changed the complexion of the team. You have to look at it in context of their passing game as well. What would they have done without Lawrence Maroney? Because, you know, hey, I hate to tell you this, everybody, but Corey Dillon's only getting 50, 60 yards a game, and I just don't think he, at his age, he can do it alone.
I even look at a game like Sunday, Tom, where obviously the holes were there. The running game was outstanding. Dillon's back in Cincinnati running angry, you know, with a lot of emotion. What did he average?
Wasn't it 4.1?
Yeah, it was barely 4 yards a carry, if I remember correctly, which is a good, solid game. Good, solid game, okay?
And listen,
there's
nothing.
Right. Nothing in comparison to what Maroney did.
And let me tell you something. Anytime someone throws the ball in the stands and hops around like a frog, I'm not going to criticize them for their performance because that was damn funny. I got to admit.
That was great. And
stomping on the Bengals logo. Yeah. That's and I love the fans threw the ball back, and I remember making the comment, ooh, they really got him.
It might have been the most interesting part of the game. Because, I mean, you know, I shouldn't say it was never close, but and I'm being honestly sincere here, and Tom, you're here as my witness. The game was over. When the Bengals were up 6-0, the game was over.
It was over, yeah. We all thought that way, too. We all felt that it was going.
The three of us were actually, Brian Lowe was there, too. He agreed, too. It was the four of us. We all said the same thing. There was no way the Bengals were going to win the game because they had lost their opportunities.
Right. Okay, let's get back to the emails. They're piling up here. We have Brian from Minnesota. Hey, Tom and Paul. I agree with you when you say that this was the Patriots' most impressive regular season win in the dynasty era. The Patriots were winning by so much in the end of the first quarter that the TV coverage switched from the Pats over to the Jacksonville-Washington game. When was the last time the Pats won a big game like that? I also just wanted to make one comment. We should have Bill talk trash before every game. Great job with the PFW guys. Oh, yeah, I don't get why some listeners don't like Tom. I consider him to be my favorite PFW guy. Well, Brian from Minnesota, you are my favorite PFW listener.
And you know what, Brian? Tom is my favorite PFW guy, too. I used to like Andy, but not anymore. He makes fun of me too much. I like Tom now. Tom's my guy.
Okay, Ryan Vaughn.
Fed was never in the discussion.
No. Yeah, I don't think he's in too many people's discussion. I was wondering what kind of contract Lawrence Maroney has signed. If it is a short contract, do you think the Pats will sign him to a long-term contract, or do you think the Pats will let another future great player go? Thanks.
5 years.
It's 5 years.
That's the most they were allowed.
Right, and it's too hard right now to say because running backs have such a short shelf life, you know,
Right.
I mean, yeah, if he's running like this 5 years from now, my guess is they sign him. But if he looks like he's starting to wear down a little bit and they have another young running back on the team, it looks like he can take over. I mean, there's too many things involved with that to predict right now.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, he could have, you know, 2 or 3 solid years, and then all of a sudden another Lawrence Maroney type is in the draft and falls into the Patriots' lap somewhere, and you might take him, and now you have options again. You know, you can go with a rookie, or you could re-sign him. My guess is that he's not, if he's looking to become, you know, one of the highest paid guys and cash in like Edgerrin James did, probably not going to do that in New England.
Right. And Paul, I forgot to tell you guys this morning, and I'm sure the listeners would be interested in this. When I used to do, before I got this job, did a lot of different freelance stuff, and I did a few things for a
I've often wondered what it was that you did before you worked here.
Well, it was going to college, basically. But in my freelance journeys, I had done some things for this Colts publication. And the guy had emailed me and was talking about Maroney. And he had an interesting thing to say. He said he heard from a pretty reliable source that the Colts were planning on trading ahead of Carolina to get Maroney, and they never thought the Patriots were going to select him.
Yeah, that
they never had any attempt to trade ahead of the Patriots, and there was reports that Bill Polian went nuts in the draft room, and it obviously, you know, because Carolina was looking for a running back, so they had already had a trade in place to move up for Maroney. I forgot what team he said. I can't remember the draft order now. But
that makes sense, and you know what? They may not have tried to get in front of the paper. They may not have had what it takes to get in front of
right
because they're down at 30. What they were 30, right?
Yeah,
they had the best record, and they didn't go to the Super Bowl, so they were 30th. Patriots were, you know, what were they?
21st.
20. Was it 21 again?
Yeah.
They may not have had enough to get up that far. That's all. That, I mean, they probably could have, but that's a long. That's a big jump. That's 10. You know, that's good 10 spots. That's a good. That's a good jump.
I just. I think that. And boy, could you imagine the Colts with Maroney? Don't even want to think about that, because like I was telling Andy, you know, the edge is the edge, but after his knee injury, he kind of changed his running style a little bit to become more of a pounder between the tackles.
Plus, let me say this about the Colts, too. I totally agree with you what you just said about James. Even though he was highly productive, I never thought the whole equaled the sum of the parts, if
right.
that makes any sense. And that's probably one of the reasons. But he was never a really good goal line runner,
mm-hmm.
especially against the Patriots, where he used to fumble all the time in the red zone. The Colts have always had trouble running the ball in the red zone.
Yes, they have.
All of a sudden, they don't have Edgerrin James, and they're running the ball in the red zone. Now, maybe that's just the element of surprise, and teams will catch up to that. But Joseph Addai has been productive enough.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's great, but he's been productive enough to offer a change of pace. And they're getting in the end zone. Those two guys are getting in. And, you know, Manning's even gotten in a couple times the last
yeah.
2 weeks.
Well, that's the joke. He has as many rushing touchdowns as the edge has. Well, we said it after all we needed to do was watch one preseason game here against Arizona, and we all said, good luck, Edge. Hope that money goes a long way. Because,
he'll be lucky to squeak out 1,000 yards.
Oh, no, he's gonna pull one of them quote-unquote hamstrings in the next couple weeks. You can bet your life on that one. Okay, Arthur says, hey, guys, I'm listening at work like I always do. I agree. You won't be seeing the Bengals in the Super Bowl without some changes in their defense. Offense alone won't get you to the Super Bowl. Case in point, even the Colts with all the weapons last year couldn't make it to the Super Bowl. Harrison James and Peyton Manning were a great group, and yet no ring for them. Keep up the great work.
Just so you know, they did not go to the Super Bowl because of their defense. And until they don't go to the Super Bowl because of their defense, I'll say the Colts can't go until they improve their defense.
I think they're right.
They get knocked out of the playoffs every year because their offense does not do the job in the playoffs. Every time.
Right. No, I totally agree.
They lose to the Patriots 20-3, and we're blaming it on their defense. They lose to the Steelers 21-18, and we're blaming it on the defense. Uh-uh. It's not the defense's fault. The offense doesn't play well in the playoffs.
Right. That's exactly right.
When they lose. I mean, obviously, they've had games that they've won that they've put up a ton of points. When they lose, it's because the offense doesn't play well.
Right. And here's the email about Haynesworth. It's from David Dion. I hate to send a non-Patriots email. That's okay.
This is an excellent email. This is a very topical
yes,
thing.
But I have to know how you gentlemen feel about the whole Haynesworth incident, especially Gene Upshaw saying he was going to appeal for him. What kind of message is he sending to the rest of the players in the league? Well, I'll give you my first, and Paul can go. I thought it should have been a 6-game suspension, so 5 games is fine with me because it was right in the ballpark where I thought. I saw the play again on tape. He noticed that Garrard's helmet was off and then hit him twice with a metal steel spike in the face. That is absolutely a horrific thing to do to a player. He's lucky he's not out for the entire season. And even arguing after the fact with Jeff Fisher like he didn't do anything wrong to me is disgusting. I have no use for him whatsoever. He's been a bust since they drafted him. He hasn't done a damn thing on the field except for this. So he's nothing to me. I don't know what you think, Paul.
Well, in terms of the infraction, no question, just despicable, a despicable act. And he's lucky that that's all he did, because he could have gotten him right in the eye. He could have stepped on his head, and God knows, you know what I mean? God knows what would have happened if he
could have took his eye out.
Oh, God, yeah. So just a despicable act. There's no two ways of looking at it. I don't know. For Gene Upshaw, I think it's ridiculous. This is what happens with these unions and these players' associations. They're so intent on defending themselves and defending their players that they lose sight of what's right and wrong. I mean, anybody that would make an appeal on behalf of this player for this act just doesn't get it. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's like when you hear about every single guy who gets suspended in Major League Baseball. I threw my bat at a guy. Oh, I'm going to appeal that.
Yeah.
what is there to appeal? You know, I don't understand that. However, there is something to it. I think 5 games is fair. I agree with Tom's assessment on that. I think there's something a little different. You get, when you violate the substance abuse policy, so you cheat in the game, you get a 4-game suspension. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is something that happened on the field, as despicable as it was. It's in the heat of the battle. Okay? God only knows what was going through Albert Haynesworth's mind to do this. I have no idea. But that's a more severe penalty than knowingly cheating.
Right.
I have a problem with that.
No, that's a fair point. I mean,
have a problem with that.
It's a fair point. I just, I don't think they want to suspend those guys.
They
for
don't.
Games.
That's
my thing.
Point.
Yeah.
They talk about how tough they are on steroid abuse. I don't think they're tough at all. First of all, I think it's nearly impossible to get caught.
Right.
Because so few people get caught. And I think that 4 games isn't enough for that. I think it should be a whole year.
And I don't know if you can remember or if anyone out there can remember. When's the last time a real superstar got caught for taking steroids? You telling me none of the best players in the most physical sport on the planet are taking an illegal substance? That's a joke.
Well, I just think of all the time. Andy and I joke about it all the time. Who gets caught? Well, generally they get caught by outside sources. Some doctor that's involved drops dime on people.
Right.
Like happened in Carolina.
Right.
Now, the other part of this is, Tom, did you see Haynesworth's apology?
Yeah.
I am hard-pressed to find a guy, first of all, as well-spoken and seemingly heartfelt and contrite in his apology than what Haynesworth. I was listening to this guy talk. First of all, I was outraged when I saw it. I saw it live because that game was a 1 o'clock game.
We were watching
I saw that play happen live during that game. Yeah, even though I was watching Drew Bledsoe hand the ball off at the time, I wasn't necessarily paying attention.
Well, I don't think anyone saw it during the play.
No. I'm not even talking about the replay. I just watch Drew all the time. You know that. But watching Haynesworth, he said, I just want to say that no one has told me what to say. This is not a statement on behalf of the team. This is coming from myself. No one put me up to this. And him getting into, I've embarrassed myself. I've embarrassed the league. I've embarrassed my team. I've embarrassed my last name, my children that have to... I was listening to this guy and...
So I have to stop, sorry.
I had a hard time believing that this man who was speaking could have possibly done the despicable act that he did on the field. Did you feel that way at all? I mean, I'm not trying to defend the guy. I just think he honestly lost his mind.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I really don't know.
You know, sometimes the guys come out and they're talking about, well, you know, the heat of the battle and this and that, and they put on this big tough guy front. It was very believable for me. Maybe I should never be on a jury because the guy swung me.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I think that he really did something that he's ashamed of.
He might have. I have no idea what he was thinking. Then he went crazy.
I have no idea. That's the part that doesn't make any sense, Tom, with his reaction with Fisher.
Right, right.
Because obviously he knows what he did. And, you know, I don't care if the guy punched him in the groin.
I know. You don't do that to somebody.
That's not an appropriate. I mean, you got to figure something happened that no one knows about.
Right. But I could only imagine what would have happened if he had hit his eye with one of those spikes. The horrific scene we would have saw then.
But I just felt it was such a stark contrast to hear his apology. And I'm not, you know, Tom, I'm a pretty skeptical guy. I don't believe anybody. That guy, I believed him when he was saying how sorry he was and how I think that it meant a lot to him. I think he was really ashamed of himself.
You know what? $500,000 for a guy who only makes $1 million-something means a lot, too. He just lost half his paycheck.
That is going to mean a lot, and I don't necessarily think that's what he was talking about, though.
No, I'm just saying, it's like some people might say that that's not a lot of money for an NFL player, but he's not making $10 million a year. He's making $1 million-something a year.
It's a lot of money for 90% of the NFL players to lose 5 game checks worth of money because he's not getting paid.
Right. So I think punishment fit the crime because he's not going to be suspended for the year. I mean, that's unrealistic expectations. So,
and I also thought that Fisher was very classy in apologizing directly to Parcells and the team and saying that if the league didn't come down on it, he would.
Right, and I can only hope that he gets out of that terrible organization and goes to a team that has a chance to win
because
he's too good of a coach to be with that crap of a team.
But I think that's a great email. I forget who sent it in.
Yeah,
but
you can send stuff non-Patriots. We can talk about the league. That's fine.
As a matter of fact, I like talking about some other stuff because it gives me an opportunity to talk about it, because a lot of times when we only see the Patriots and we miss a lot of
right.
stuff. And well, not Tom, because Tom watches football 24/7.
I tape them and watch them when I get home.
Tom has no life. His poor fiance. Ooh, oh. Frank Thomas going high and deep.
Oh, great. Home run. A's won. Twins nothing. This next email is a little perplexing. Maybe Gary can shed some light. I don't know. First of all, it says, I love Maroney, but you can't give him the award already. You are totally overlooking the Saints' Marquise Colson. We're not overlooking him. I would just vote for Maroney. He has been amazing for them this year, especially this week's game with 5 catches for 132 yards and a touchdown. Now, this is the part of the email I don't get. By the way, I thought it was pretty lame of Fred to take his argument with Tom out into the hall and continue it with an unwitting Troy Brown. He was asking leading questions like, you don't want to go to China, do you? Come on, you and the other guys don't really want to go, right? That was the kind of lame way to make his point. Do you know anything about this?
This is Mike
Felger.
Was that
Felger, Patriots I'm Friday? I wasn't here.
It must be Patriots Friday.
Yeah,
Mike Felger was the one.
I don't know what you're talking about into the what we did is Tom and Fred, meaning me and Fred, left. Michael Felger interviewed Troy Brown.
Right.
And Felger was saying beforehand, he was arguing with Fred, it wasn't me, that the players lost to the Broncos because they didn't want to go to China.
Right.
And my guess is he was the one that was asking Troy Brown the questions.
Exactly. I
can guarantee you it wasn't Fred.
Yeah, no, it was Felger that was asking about they don't really want to go to China.
I mean, you got to be kidding me. Fred's learning how to speak Chinese, for Christ's sakes.
Fred can't wait to get there. The other thing on Colston, first of all, I think he's off to a terrific start.
He's talking like the guy in Fat Albert.
And we remember, Tom, my affinity for Colston. Why?
Mm-hmm. Hofstra.
Atlantic 10.
Yep.
A-10 football. Can't beat it. But, look, I mean, he's had a great start to the season, and he's up in that category. He's up in that that consideration with Maroney, and you mentioned the kid from the Packers, Jennings. No doubt about it. I think they deserve to have the thing. But let's not just get lost. I think Maroney had, for example, Colston had 5 catches for 130-something yards Sunday. Well, he had one of those for 86 yards and a
right.
touchdown, completely meaningless.
Right.
They were down 11 points with a minute left.
And does anybody, when you watch Marquise Colston, now I could be totally wrong. Maybe he's the next Marvin Harrison. But I don't say, man, that guy's the next great receiver in the NFL. I say this is a 7th-round draft pick who has worked his butt off and is performing well with the Saints. That's what I say. When I see Lawrence Maroney, I say, you know what? That guy might be up there with Tomlinson in a year or two as one of the best backs in the NFL. Maybe I'm overblowing it, but that's what I see when I watch this guy run.
Yeah, and I don't know if I put him that high, but I agree with you. Colston, I think, is terrific. I think that he's been off to a great start, and if he finishes the year with 12 or 1,300 receiving yards, he's on pace right now. He's got like 350
right,
receiving
but
yards.
But if you count him, you got to put Greg Jennings in there too. I mean, he's got a couple of long touchdowns. He had another good game last night.
See,
he had 4 or 5 catches.
And that's what happens. That kind of skews the number. You know, Maroney has a 41-yard run. Okay, his numbers aren't skewed
right
now. Right, but, you know, you throw at this stage of the season, you throw one – you know, an 86-yard touchdown with an otherwise already solid start, and the number, you know, he's on pace for like 1,300 yards receiving. Well, if he ends up with that, then I'm going to have to really think hard, long and hard about giving him Rookie of the Year.
Right.
But, you know,
it's
chances are
games.
Those big plays even themselves out, you know?
Right, and it's like I said, listen, you got a whole lot coming from Reggie Bush yet. You haven't seen anything. He hasn't done nothing yet, but you got a whole lot coming from him, too.
And what I've seen of him has been pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's just, you know, they're making this big thing. Like, to me, the thing I've been impressed the most with is that he's not trying to go outside all the time. It's just he's got nowhere to run. His line stinks. Yeah, and he's only getting 8 carries a game. Well, what are you going to do with that? You know what I'm saying? I just unless you're Jarius Norwood, by the way, if you want to talk about rookies of the year, this guy's got 2 100-yard games. He only gets 5 carries a game.
He's averaging about 12 a touch.
As many of you know, I loved him before the draft, but you talk about speed. Holy Christ, did you see that run against Arizona? I mean, he got in the open field. He was gone. He'll be a nice running back.
So we all love Colston too. So don't
and Dan Heffernan also chiming in saying Maroney looks like a superstar, but you know it's a legitimate battle with Colston. I wouldn't quite warrant an investigation if he didn't win it. Well, there's a lot of people involved in it. I'm just that was a little bit of a over exaggeration. Dan, stick to the things before Christmas or whatever it is you do. You can even add that one in if you want.
And see how he works in that. Should be an investigation.
I know he'll remember what I said, that's for sure. This is from Phil. And go ahead, Gary.
Phil
from Boston.
Hey, Phil, what's happening, Phil?
Directive to me, Tom. I checked the game log, and Gostkowski kicked off 7 times for an average of 74 yards. His shortest was 70, and there were 4 touchbacks. This was a tremendous performance, especially considering the kick coverage was a problem last year for the Patriots. Even if the Patriots sign a veteran kicker for the rest of the year to handle most short-range field goals, it would still be worth a spot on the 45-day roster to have a guy kicking off.
No, it won't.
I hope the Patriots fans don't get too down on this guy. I don't think Bill would do that.
He won't do it, and it wouldn't be worth a spot.
And you know how
it's just not that important.
You know how I know Bill won't do it? Because I heard Bill Parcells in the press conference the other day saying, we won't carry 2 kickers because we just don't feel... And you know that...
I don't want to do that.
Right, and you know that probably the Bills think alike, and it just won't... Listen, his kickoffs have been great, and like Paul said, his field goals will probably improve as well. We're just saying, if you're looking at it right now, he's been struggling kicking the football, and... You know, the Patriots are going to play some close games. I don't think they might. I don't know. I don't think they're going to beat every team like they did the Bengals 38-13. And they might need him to make an important kick. And he might do it. And when he does, then we'll say, you know, there it is. He's proven his worth. But if you're 2 for 4, if that turns into 3 for 7, all of a sudden Billy Cundiff gets a call or Grammatica gets a call.
Somebody. And look, I think it's – I'm not – pushing the panic button, so I don't want to be misunderstood. But also, I disagree with Phil because I don't think it's worth it having a guy to kick off. I just don't think that's that important to have a guy that's kicking the ball into the end zone.
Okay? Right.
It's not that important. It's a fact. It's not.
Field goals are more important than that. That's
so
what we're trying to say.
They get the ball on the 20-yard line as opposed to the 25. I understand that NFL coaches magnify all of those things, and they run all these numbers into 9,000 different ways and how important they are. It's just not that important. It's
right.
Not more important than 3 points.
I agree.
The 5 or 6 yards that you get because you're getting touchbacks instead of letting them get out to the... How many times do they get over the 30-yard line? Not that many.
Right.
It's just not that important.
It's funny, though, because when you say a negative thing about a Patriots player, they all chime in. But then when I give Lawrence Maroney the Rookie of the Year, everybody's calling for Marquise Colston to get it.
Well, I think it's funny, too, is last week after the Denver game when Gostkowski had his second kick blocked in as many weeks and the Patriots played poorly against Denver, we were flooded with this is a problem. Why are we getting these kicks blocked? This needs to improve. What's going on? Now, all of a sudden, the Patriots go out and they play a great game against Cincinnati.
No, it's not a problem.
In my opinion, the best game in over a year since Pittsburgh last year.
Yep.
It's not a problem. Let's focus on his kickoffs. He missed a field goal as badly as you can miss it,
right.
And everybody wants to focus on his kickoffs.
Right, and then...
Kickoffs? We're talking kickoffs?
And then we get criticized, but hey, if we're looking at the Patriots, we have to look at some of the negative parts too, and maybe after that game, the only negative you could say was Gostkowski missed a terribly.
Yeah, if he misses the field goal wide left or wide right, that's fine. It was a 48-yard field goal. By no means is that a gimme in the NFL, for anybody,
right.
Even the best kicker. But, the way he kicked it is definitely a little bit of a cause for concern.
Right. And you don't have to listen to us. Josh Miller said it. If you don't get the job done, Bill will put someone in here who will. So that's Josh Miller. It's not Tom and Paul. And Phil takes one last shot at us.
Good
Can
you
guys
Phil.
Get Flip a chance to do the PFW show sometime? He predicted the Sunday's outcome better than any other staff member at PFW, as did Mike Rattay.
That's correct.
Who picked the Patriots.
But just to show you how much that was a surprise that they won, even Mike Reese.
Yeah.
picked Cincinnati.
And that's about as bad as Fred. Okay, we got Michael from Santa Clara. Mike from Santa Clara. As soon as I heard the Pats picked up Gabriel, I picked him up in my fantasy team, and it's paid off. I knew that he was talented but was underutilized in Oakland out here and believe he will be Brady's prime long-range target. Eventually he will draw double coverage, but that will give others opportunity for yardage. Has that happened yet? Because I haven't seen the games. I only hear it on Sirius. Can you comment on his speed and health? Because I'm not sure if he will be able to outpace and break away from defenders right now. He has said he is at the top of his game and in great physical condition. Is he the Patriots' version of Oakland's Moss?
Well, I don't think anybody is that.
No.
To answer the question, no, it hasn't happened. Matter of fact, teams have gone the opposite route. Instead of double covering him, they're actually putting nobody on him.
Right. Yeah, the Bengals tried the defense. Let's just hope he drops it.
He had two plays, two catches, the touchdown where no one covered him, and then the one over that was like a third and eight over the middle for 19 yards. He was just wide open. No one covered him. He's been good. Craig on the phone?
We got Craig on the phone.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How's it going?
How are you, my man?
Oh, I'm fine. Just healing up still. It'll be a while, I guess, before I go back to work, so you guys are going to have to put up with me.
Well, luckily you have a game like Sunday to speed up that recovery process. I'm sure that made things a little bit better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. It was awesome. You know, everybody before the game, you know, they kind of like, you know, looking at the Denver game and how the Pats played and looking at how since he played all of last year with Carson Palmer being one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and I don't think a lot of people gave the Patriots a whole lot of a chance, you know, of competing
in that game.
Let alone blowing them out. So
that's true.
Yeah, I was definitely bouncing off the ceiling. That was awesome. You guys were talking about Lawrence Maroney. I know it's been a subject of conversation throughout the show.
Yeah.
One guy that
Tom's got a man crush.
I'm here in South Carolina, and a lot of the folks around here are really touting Williams for Carolina. He actually has he's in second, I believe, amongst the rookies.
He looks phenomenal when he gets
a chance. Tom has a man crush on him too.
Yeah, I really like him, and I think they're. Andy said to me, you know, during the game, I never understood the infatuation with Deshaun Foster. I don't get it either. I think they got a better player sitting on the bench. They need to get him more carries.
Well, you know, I know Gary, you had, not Gary, excuse me, Paul, you had mentioned that you thought that Maroney might be 40 or 50 yards in front of Bush. Actually, he's way out in front.
Total yards.
Yeah, total yards. Maroney has 560. Williams has 452. Colston has 336. Bush has 397. And Joseph Addai has 279.
How many yards rushing does Maroney have?
He's got almost 300, right?
Just a sec. Maroney has 294.
Yeah, 294.
294, and he has over 200 yards receiving?
He's got 76 yards in receiving.
So how does that give him over 500 yards of total offense?
190 in kick returns.
Oh, that doesn't count.
No, this is combined yards from scrimmage.
That's not from scrimmage, kick returns.
Well, okay.
That doesn't count.
But I'm sitting here looking
I saw the stat last night on ESPN. They were within about 40 yards of each other. And I was like, how does Maroney have over 500 yards?
Oh, well.
That makes sense. Over 200 of them were kick returns.
I was reading Pat Kerwin's article on NFL.com. His article is First Round Runners, a Good Investment. And he compares all the running backs from the rookie class.
Uh-huh.
And he's got all their catches and everything on here, what the total yardages are, and he's got returns and everything in here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the reason why I mentioned it.
Yeah. No, I mean, Maroney has been, look, Tom and I, you don't have to sell us. We think he's the, you know, it's only a quarter of the season, but we think he's the rookie of the year. And
I just hope it continues, you know, and I hope Dylan, you know, with his legs being fresh, I mean, you know, it's a hell of a 1-2 punch. I know we played the Bengals running defense, which basically, you know, they're not very good, and they haven't been, you know. And I just hope that we see that kind of success more so than what we saw against
them. Well, you know what, Craig? Unless you're playing the Bears, which they do, there's not too many teams, you know, Jacksonville, there's not too many teams that do stop the run that great in today's NFL. You know, even teams like in the NFC that are supposed to be good, like the Cowboys and the Giants, you can run the ball on those teams. So unless you have a dominant run defense, I think the Patriots will be able to run the ball on most teams. The big test will be in November when Chicago comes calling. You want to see a bloodbath. I can't wait. I'm actually looking forward to that game more than the Colt game. Because, you know, the Colts with the high-flying offense, we've seen it before. I can't wait to see the Patriots and the Bears, you know, get down and dirty. Now, that's going to be a football game.
And that's there at Gillette, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. That'll be an awesome game. That'll be an awesome game. And we might end up being the team that keeps them from being undefeated.
Well, I don't know if they're quite in the 85 Bears class
yet.
I
don't think they have the offense to do something like that. I mean, I know that they've played very well so far, but I'm not looking for them to be scoring 30 points a game to augment that defense.
Well, then again, you look at the division they're playing in. I mean, you know, how difficult could their schedule be?
It's weak.
You know, their biggest challenge is playing Minnesota at the Dome.
But the way the Bears play, Craig, it's tough to go undefeated because they're going to play a lot of close games and a couple times the ball won't bounce their way.
I mean, can the schedule be any easier than the Patriots? And I don't think anybody felt the Patriots had a chance to go undefeated.
Oh, no.
You know, before the season started, so.
No, I've said 12-4 all along. That's worst case scenario, though.
Worst case scenario, 12-4. Okay.
I'm a homer. What do you want me to say? You'll be as charged. You put me in there with Fred in that category.
All right, Craig. Well, thanks for dropping by.
Get better. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care. Dan Heffernan chiming back in. Don't worry, Tom. I won't forget what you said, but I won't include it in my night before Christmas. You've given me lots of better ammunition than a rookie of the year investigation comment already. What I really need is more good notes from Paul this season, but we have plenty of time left.
I'm not going to go out there and crap my pants. I'm not giving you good material so far, huh, Dan? All right. I can work on that.
He'll find stuff. Don't worry. Jeff, this is the Jeff that I think that we want Christina to dump. I think it may be him.
Hey, what's up,
Jeff? He said all jokes. Yeah, it is, because he says all jokes aside.
Okay.
Is it just me, or is it Patriots Nation just plain spoiled? Every time the Pats lose, it's the end of the world. Gloom and doom. However, they always bounce back and get it done. Any thoughts on fans who leave the game early during the fourth quarter like the Cincinnati fans did Sunday? Well, to be honest with you, Jeff,
I'd have left
in the second quarter.
A lot earlier than that.
The
leaving early thing, I think that's being perceived as being a great fan if you stay to the end. I never understood that. If the game is over and the entertainment value is lost for you.
Yeah, you know, you want to, if you know, you got a family and stuff, that's what I'm more worried about would be like the crowd noise type stuff and things like that. I mean, if it's 38-13, there's no need to, your team got beat down. There's no need to stay
like
and watch the rest of it.
You need to show the sign of faith for them and that you
support
them.
Now, if you
them.
Leave in the third quarter, if you're down by, I mean, there's a chance you have a Buffalo Bills kind of comeback and you miss it, then,
I left
you know,
the game in the third quarter.
But I'm just saying, if you miss it, don't cry about it later. one of the greatest comebacks of all time. But by the way, if Frank Reich is the opposing quarterback, you may want to stay.
There was a game, I want to say, in 97 or 98 here at Foxborough. The Patriots played the Atlanta Falcons. It must have been 98. That's the year the Falcons went to the Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken. And Atlanta came to town and laid an absolute whooping on the Pats, I want to say 41-10. I left that game in the third quarter.
Old Paul. Mike from Winnipeg. Great show.
They lost to the Atlanta freaking Falcons 41-10.
Oh, I remember it's when the tight end did the dirty bird.
O.J. Santiago?
Yeah, Santiago did the dirty bird in the end zone. I remember it.
I left. I'll tell you exactly when. They were losing, I don't even remember. I think they were losing by 21 or maybe more. And it was a fourth and inches from about the 15-yard line. And they passed up the field goal and went for it. And Drew got hit from behind, the ball popped loose, and the guy ran it back for a touchdown. And I said, all right, it's time to go.
All right, Mike from Winnipeg chiming in. Great show. I listen to your show every week. After the Cincy win, I find that the Patriots are catching their spark. How many more years is Dylan under contract for? Just wondering if maybe they would release him or trade him. I love their 1-2 punch. Kool-Aid is awesome. I think he is very good running back. I'm just iffy because Dylan is just up there in age, and he has had some injuries the last couple of years. I'm also going to my first Pats game versus Minnesota. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing.
I believe he has 2 more years left on his contract after this, but I don't think that he will be around after this year.
No, I believe this will be his last year.
I think they'll let him go.
Mm-hmm. And
no one's going to trade for him. No one's going to.
And it's just like we said, when you got a guy like Maroney entering his second year, you just got to get him the ball.
Right.
I mean, this year, fine. You know, you don't want him to hit the rookie wall, but you got to remember something. This guy's probably going to pack on 10 to 12 pounds of muscle this offseason, and he'll probably be faster. So imagine that. Imagine as scary as he is now. Imagine him even scarier. This LT, Larry Johnson, they've all done the same thing. They've gained weight their second season, and they're even scarier.
Now, we'll see if it maintains this kind of, you know, back and forth with the 1-2 punch and everything. Maybe the Patriots might want to keep Dylan to try to keep that dynamic going.
If he's willing to take a reduced role,
I think that. It's not going to be like this all year. I think
Maroney's going to start right.
It's going to, you know, it's going to be, you know, less and less of Dylan and more and more of Maroney.
So you're saying if he's willing to take that Jerome Bettis, you know, 12 carries for 10 yards and 8 touchdowns and like
that could
that
be
type
too.
Of thing?
But I'm even talking about if it stays to be like this kind of split carries kind of a deal or close to it, then I can understand the Patriots saying, well, no, that's the reason why Maroney is so successful. Is that he doesn't have to carry it 350, 400 times, you know, because we have Dylan here to help him out.
See, I don't think
that's going to happen,
right,
but they might look at it and say the two-back system worked for us. Let's keep it going. Now, if it, as we both suspect it will, Maroney is going to eventually be the dominant guy, then I don't see why you keep Dylan around next year.
I already got him trading up to get Calvin Johnson. You got Chad Jackson, Gabriel, Calvin Johnson, Watson, Maroney. You got speed all over the place. We don't need any old men bringing that offense down.
All right. Look at you, Calvin Johnson.
Dear Paul and Tom, last week you were on the Bash Josh McDaniels bandwagon.
I was never on the Bash.
Did he get
Josh
better
McDaniels.
Against the Bengals, or has Bill stepped in? I don't think we were bashing him. We were just... what were you saying? I don't even remember, to be honest with you.
There's individual calls in every game I don't agree with.
Right.
Can I make that statement? I mean, it's just the way it happens. Some of them work, by the way. Matter of fact, the play call that I disagreed with the most so far this year was a 32-yard touchdown for the Denver Broncos. It was 3rd and 1, and they threw a bomb to Javon Walker late in the first half. I thought that was a terrible call. Still think it was a terrible call. Touchdown.
Right.
Shows you what I know. I don't know anything. Otherwise, I'd be a coach.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, where was that email from?
Thailand.
Where in Thailand?
Bangkok. No?
I don't remember. Hang on.
Was it from Bangkok?
Phuket. Where's that?
It is from... I didn't even catch it. It is from fuck it, Thailand. I don't know.
Hey, Dan, you got any ammunition now, my friend?
I don't know what you do with that kind of stuff.
That really bothers me. Some ass.
I'll say it.
If Fred was here, he'd say, I believe the correct pronunciation is Phuket.
You know,
well, of course, Fred probably lived there. So, fuck it, Thailand. Wait until Andy gets a hold of that one.
Oh, God.
No wonder no one listens to this show.
Oh, it's gracious.
Okay, now John has come in with an interesting email about the Upshaw appeal. This is stuff that me and Paul do not know about. I am not a defender of any unions. However, it is my understanding that Upshaw is only appealing the portion of the fine that goes after the prorated portion of Haynesworth's signing bonus. Haynesworth's fine is rumored to be $500,000. His NFL salary for 2006 is $645,000. So the $500,000 would go beyond his 5 game checks. From what I heard on another network, they are only appealing the amount of his fines that exceeds his game checks. So they're not appealing the fine, just the total amount.
That's a good email, good info there. I didn't have any idea what they were appealing either way. So yeah, no, I would agree with that. Then I think that there's probably some inequity there that the guy's going to end up losing money because he did one stupid thing. That's not really fair.
And he also wanted to know about the hit on Caldwell. I have not heard of any.
I'm going to guess that's going to draw a fine.
Yeah,
just
probably.
Because
I don't think it should have drew a flag, but it's going to draw a fine.
I just think that's the way the NFL is nowadays. If you hit somebody hard, you get fined.
And me and Paul were talking about this earlier. You know, I know the referees see it in real time, and he did like he what was the word, catapulted himself.
He launched himself.
It was shoulder to sternum. That's what it was. Anybody who saw anything different,
he didn't hit him head.
He's blind.
There was an on-site supervisor official. I think his name was Jim Dalopoulos or something like that. I forget his last name.
I don't know.
He had a long quote, which had three or four different things itemized, and I disagreed with every one of them except for launching himself. He said that it was helmet to helmet.
It was not.
He said it was a defenseless player. It was not. The guy had the ball in his hands.
Yeah, I don't even know what a defenseless player is. To me, that's Clifton when Sapp hit him.
Right.
That's defenseless to me. When you're looking up at the sky and someone comes and nails you, that's defenseless.
I agree.
But, hey, that's, you know, what are we going to do? There's no sense arguing about it. That's today's NFL.
And now, that said, that's going to draw a penalty more often than not. Just like, you know, I don't sit here and say that that was a terrible call. I think it was, in my opinion, it was a good, clean hit. Teddy Bruschi agreed with you and I, by the way.
Right.
Thought it was a clean hit.
And
it didn't have anything at all to do with the game.
Right.
Because the Patriots were going to win that game. They didn't need that 15 yards. They were going to win the game anyway.
Yeah, it definitely was not helmet to helmet. If you're looking, if you believe it was a penalty in another fashion, that's fine. But it was not helmet to helmet, and anybody with two eyes can see that. So that's for sure.
I just don't know how he's supposed to break up that pass without doing what he did.
I just think he did his job. It was a vicious, vicious, vicious hit. But you know, you're getting paid a lot of money.
That's,
I don't know.
They're protecting
the quarterbacks, protecting this guy, they're protecting that guy. You know, pretty soon you just put flags out there and let them run around. Fastest guy wins. We have Brian in Colorado. Do you all have any info on the progress of players like Jonathan Sullivan, Pierre Woods, Marquise Hill, and Lakeven Smith? I know Sullivan is one of your favorite beanbags, but I'm hoping he can progress similarly to Wilfork.
I'm sure that's going to happen.
He also said, Colson's catch was not meaningless.
He's talking like the guy in Fat Albert.
Colson's catch was meaningful only to me, because I had Carolina given 7.
No, and it put him over the top in his fantasy matchup.
No, I don't care about that. I only care about the fact that I was covering the spread with 40 seconds left in the game and did not cover the spread.
We got Fred... Fred Kirsch chiming in.
Oh, great.
Don't dawdle. Hurry back up here after the show. Hey, Fred, shut up. Fuck it, Tyler. Yeah, that's what I think of you. Don't dawdle. What are we going to do? Hang out in the hallway?
I don't know what he thinks that we do down here, but it's really unbelievable.
All right, we got someone who's wrong here.
So you're going to jump all
it's
over?
It's Tom. He didn't notice the helmet was off. He bent down and took it off. I TiVo this a few times, and you can see the guy take it off, but the helmet was on. He bent over, back up, and his helmet was off. The only other way the helmet came off is the Cowboys took it off himself.
Who said anything about Haynesworth taking the helmet off?
No, he's saying that Haynesworth took it off. Like, I said he saw that the helmet was off.
Exactly, and he did. He was looking straight down when he stomped him in the face.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. For certain reasons, I watched this quite a few times. I did not see him bend down and take the helmet off. Maybe I'm blind, but he caught him with his cleat, and then he looked down and he caught him again with his cleat. That's what I saw.
All I know is when the helmet was off, he was looking straight down
at his head.
Intentionally stomped his cleat right in his face.
Although I will agree with John on this. He says, Tom, you don't have to read this part on the air,
but in
Andy Hart fashion. The other guy, Paul, the word isn't sar, it's saw.
Sar?
He's making fun of your Boston accent.
Go
like I saw it. You know how you say that? I saw it.
I saw it. I saw it. That's my Kevin Costner. Wow. You saw it. You saw it.
All right, we'll finish with this one because we don't want to dawdle. Or Fred's going to give us a butt whooping when we get up there.
We're going to need some more pronunciation, instructions for the future.
Hey guys, great job as usual. This is Said. Okay.
Saeed.
Hey guys, great job as usual. Can you shed some light on the coverage used by the Patriots to slow down the Bengals? Hushmanzada keeps complaining about it. We didn't get the game out here in Los Angeles. After the beating that the Seahawks took from Chicago, do you guys feel that the Seahawks are the team to be in the Super Bowl like the experts are declaring? Keep up the good work. Saeed.
Well, the coverages, I thought...
were over the top.
Yeah, it was, I think they played a lot of, you know, almost like cover four. It looked like they just had everything. The goal was to keep everything in front of them and to make sure that there were no big plays over the top. And they did that by dropping people and flooding zones with extra defensive backs. They had five and six defensive backs on almost every play from the first quarter on.
Right, and it was like Cushman Zada was like, well, they won't cover us one-on-one. They know what will happen. Well, yeah, right, you're right. That's why they didn't cover you one-on-one.
Yeah, that's idiotic.
Because they knew what would happen. I mean, I think if you could get Bill privately, he'd probably say tell you the same thing. You know, our defensive backs can't cover them one-on-one.
Right.
And that's why they played the way they did. I'll tell you what, I went there after the game, and I was waiting for Chad Johnson, and I noticed everybody was over by Hushman Zada's locker, and I didn't understand why. Now I know. Chad only talks before the game. After the game, he's a baby. And, you know, I have a little bit less respect for him now, because it's all fun and games before the game, but after the game, you don't want anything to do with anything. But Hushman Zada's the talker after the game. That's who you guys want to get. But his comments were asinine, and quite frankly, so was the Bengals' performance.
And what do you think about Chicago? Do you think that they vault to the top of the NFC?
I think it's still early.
Right now, yeah, I would say they've been the most impressive so far.
Just because the way they play defense.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it was comical that people thought that, well, they won't really miss Sean Alexander because they'll just spread out the Bears and throw the ball. Yeah, really? That's a great theory.
Well,
let's take away the threat of the run. That'll help you.
He's better than I ever thought he was, but Matt Hasselbeck is still, in my opinion, not an elite quarterback. And I know that a lot of people, you know, put him up there. Fred would argue with me until he blew in the face that he's one of the three or four best quarterbacks in football. I don't see that. And look, it was one bad game against an excellent defense. I'm not going to sit here and trash Hasselbeck. I still think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's the best, the way some other people do.
Well, one quick final email. Simon Brown came back in and said, "Dear Paul and Tom, I still have tears rolling down my cheeks from laughing at your fuck it pronunciation. It's actually pronounced Phuket." Like Fred, like I told you, Fred would tell us.
That's a clip.
Fuck it, Tyler.
That was great. That was great. John Rook in the house.
Oh, I'm glad I got here for that.
He didn't even read it initially. He had to go back. So, Gary had a prompt him to go back. And
I didn't see it. So, John, what did you think of Maroney's performance? A little bit below average. Bench him.
Just killing me over Maroney.
He was on the offense.
This is an ongoing.
The problem is he just doesn't understand. You don't understand. And I'm not ready to put the guy in the Hall of Fame. Did he have a great performance? Yes. Could he perhaps been the difference in the game Sunday? Absolutely. But we all need to do a little mea culpa-ing here, Tom. Simply because nobody gave the Patriots a shot.
Well, right. We just spent
including
two hours.
Yourself.
We
right?
spent two
right.
hours doing that.
Okay. Well, then that
and everybody
that's
was
what
calling
he's...
up saying that we're going to be backtracking. None of us.
Nobody's
none of
backtracking.
Us is backtracking.
I didn't give them a chance.
I didn't think they were going to win the game.
I didn't either. And especially,
and I don't think
I
was foolish to think that.
I don't see
even
how anybody
game,
could
even
be
after
foolish.
The game unfolded.
I know. Nobody would have thought that you would have gotten the job done in the secondary that you had done. Nobody would have thought within reasonable expectation that you would have had that kind of pressure put. I mean, I thought Jarvis Green had one of the games of his career. I thought, with the pressure that was applied on those guys, I thought that they threw a few wrinkles in. I thought they did the right thing. We talked about this last week. If you had to have an offensive game plan, the one that you wanted to do was to keep the ball out of Cincinnati's hands as much as possible, which means run and run and run some more, and they did that.
But,
I agree.
John, we should have seen this coming because the Patriots have three future Hall of Famers in Belichick, Brady, and Maroney. So,
he's never
going
to let me go of that one, is he?
No, this is an ongoing joke. This is kind of the Andy Hart.
Do you think Matt Hasselbeck's an elite quarterback?
I think he's he's leading the next group.
That's what I think.
Like,
of him.
All right, how many are in the first group? The elite group, then?
I would say Manning, Brady, Palmer, and. Yeah, geez, I don't know. The way he's playing right now, I have to put McNabb in there. If he continues this the rest of the season, I'll keep him there. I feel like he won't keep this up. And then I feel it's like Dahome and Hasselbeck are like right are there. You know what I mean? Like those next guys who I would want on my team.
Actually, I'll agree with you there. I think that's probably, I mean, is he a great quarterback? No. Is he a good quarterback? Yes. Is he an adequate quarterback for the system they have in Seattle? Yes. Well, is he a quarterback that has a team built around him and all he has to do?
See, that's part of, well,
all he has to do is just run the show.
Right.
Absolutely. You don't need the quarterback in that particular instance to be the guy like you do in a couple of other spots.
Right.
And maybe we saw a little bit about what he is when Sean Alexander's not running for 2,000
yards. Maybe
that's
why he was the MVP last year.
I think that that was an appropriate selection, an MVP, Sean Alexander.
Oh,
and
no,
I think
no,
we
no.
realize now how much of an MVP he really was.
Right.
Because I never thought that we'd ever see Seattle held to 6 points like we did the other night.
As good as Chicago is on defense.
As good as Chicago is on defense, I didn't think they'd ever get held to 6 points. So I was just as shocked last night as anybody else. Almost as shocked with that one as I was with the Patriots game. I mean,
right.
Pleasantly so, though.
Right.
So.
Well, John, we'd like to sit and talk with you, but if we don't get upstairs soon, Fred's going to go outside and get one of those one of those sticks from the trees and whoop us on our butts.
And whip you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got to get back upstairs.
Fred's instructed us not to dawdle, so Patriots playbook.
Coming up next.
Playbook.